everyone. This is Yajun.
Hi, this is Jingjing.
Thank you for listening to our latest episode of Women Podcast.
And today, we have an awesome guest for you guys. We have the honor to invite Liu Fang, the co-founder of Greatly Brewing. And probably many of you know and also have visited and also maybe love their beer. Greatly is one of the first craft brewery in North China.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And then Liu Fang founded this business with her husband, Carl Setter. I hope I pronounced his surname right.
Carl Setter.
Yeah. No, it's a hard pronunciation. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're very happy to have Liu Fang here and to share your stories of how you started the business and how you're running the business with your husband and then some of the challenges and then the interesting stories to share with us. So thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. It's my pleasure to be able to on the podcast. And I've heard so much about you guys and finally being able to get on one. It's a great pleasure.
Oh, great, great. Okay, well, the first question from us is the name.
Mm-hmm.
Great Leap. It's a very interesting name and it has reflected deep Chinese culture.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you come up with the name and why you have the name?
Right, so Carl and I had this idea of building a craft brewery back in the year of 2009, basically, and then we've come up with, you know, many names and some of them go way too far and Red Guards or whatever. You know, we've always wanted this to be, you know, a Chinese brewery. It has to be Chinese specific with Chinese ingredients, Chinese names and everything. So we actually had a list of names and we took it over to my grandparents to ask them, you know, what's their opinion on the names, and Great Leap being one of them. That's the one that my grandpa picked. My grandpa is illiterate. He doesn't, you know, he can't really read, he can't really write, but, you know, he's got a great sense. The reason why we approached them to ask their opinion is that, you know, they went through all the harsh periods in recent China, and, you know, if anything, their opinions matter the most, whether it's a good name, whether it's offensive, whether it brings out, you know, memories that they are not willing to face anymore. That was our intention. And my grandpa's, you know, heard the name Great Leap, Da Yue in Chinese, and he immediately loved it because, you know, Great Leap, before the political movement, it had way more deep meanings of taking a big risk in your life and making something out of your life and being able to go somewhere, achieve something away from home. And that's exactly what we did back then, because we were both working in well-paid jobs before we started Great Leap, because we had so much passion for brewing, for this brand. We had to quit our jobs, and by that time was 5 months pregnant. So I lost all the benefits, and, you know, literally taking a leap into something unknown. And my grandpa's like, this is deep, this is meaningful, this is personal. You should call it Great Leap.
Wow.
And now here we are, 7 years of Great Leap. It's literally today we have our anniversary celebration today.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Wow.
Right. And you mentioned that you were 5 months pregnant when you guys started this journey.
Yeah.
And your grandparents was okay on that?
My grandparents were more than supportive in us basically jumping off the roof into like unknown. I was brought up by my grandparents, so when I said they went through everything, I know a lot of people have of their age have been through the same similar things, but for them it has never been easy, you know, growing up in a period where it's like, you know, political movement, there's starvation, and them being able to raise three children and finally, you know, watching them grow up and everything. My dad being the eldest son, and they lost my dad when I was 6 years old, so they had to transform their roles of being grandparents to being new parents again to a six-year-old girl. And they've done a great job, you know, giving me a warm home and providing for me. And even though it was difficult, but they've always worked really hard in making me safe and happy. So my grandparents have always been very supportive. Whatever I wanted to do in my life, it's always, you know, as long as you're happy with this decision, and you should just go ahead and do it. So when I told them, you know, Carl and I are going to quit our jobs. By the way, you're going to be a great-grandparents. You know, we're going to start a bar and we're going to go from there and see where it goes. And my grandpa's like, yes, you should absolutely do it. And I figured you were never a material for the office job anyway. You'd probably fuck that up. So go do something. Go do something that you really want. Go do something that's your desire to achieve. So
that's really interesting angle from the grandparents, because I imagine... Do you mind if I ask you which generation that you were born? Your 80s?
Your
80s.
Yeah.
And then so imagine like your grandparents is like, we also born in the 80s. So our grandparents' generation is like in 1950s?
Yeah, 60s? Yeah. My grandpa, he was born in the 40s.
In the 40s.
Yeah.
And then for that generation of Chinese having such a vision, be such open-minded and forward-looking. Because in China, I think... a lot of us, when we're growing up and then we're being told, we're educated that you need to have steady jobs, you know, like it's better you work for the government, and then or as a teacher, you know, stable, especially if you're a woman and then you're pregnant. So for parents or like grandparents to have this vision, I think is really, really rare.
Yeah, it is very rare. And I am lucky enough to be able to grow up with them and with this mindset. Like I said, you know, my grandparents who were both born in the 40s, they went through, you know, all the major changes in the Chinese society. And, you know, they are the ones I would describe as liberal survivors, because life has never been easy on them. You know, it's just literally like a waves of difficulties, like trying to smash them down on the ground. And but they always, you know, stood up and being able to hold this positive attitude towards life. It's not easy at all. Like, they're not just some typical Chinese grandparents. They are the typical Chinese grandparents, being born raised in Chufu, Shandong, the birthplace of Confucius. It's like that, where people are brought up to be conservative. Like a lot of my relatives and families are really, really conservative in the way they think, in the way they treat females in their family. But my grandparents never did that. I was really, really lucky. Even when I was little, because of my specific situation and not being able to have, you know, a parent figure in my life, being at school, being mocked by other children, or, you know, sometimes it's not even being mocked, it's more of like being patronized by other parents. Of like, well, they would come to my grandparents and they would say, your granddaughter has done so well at school, straight A student, and she's done so well, you should be so relieved. And, you know, when she grows up, she just needs to find a good job, good husband, and you will feel, you know, happy, you don't have any burdens anymore. My grandpa lost it on them. Like, in front of me, lost it on them. And he just said, my granddaughter is no less than your son, and she's capable of doing anything that your son could do or even more. So stop patronizing me, like, or all my granddaughter, and we don't need
and
your
also
sympathy.
Make her feel like you're a burden. Right?
Yeah, make me feel like, you know, you just need to find her a good family and, you know, make sure that she gets married and she'll be fine. And my grandpa's like, no, this is not your destiny. You do make your own life and we'll be supportive no matter what. So them being able to be there and say that, like, constantly in front of me, and then, you know, my grandpa losing, and my grandpa's a very nice person, he never loses anyone, but that moment I was just like, well, I'm really proud.
Wow.
How old were you then?
I was 9 years old probably when that happened. So, like, my grandpa just, he didn't give a shit. Like,
right.
He was like, no, don't say that thing in front of my granddaughter. This is just wrong. No.
Very cool, grandpa.
Very, very cool. Yeah, very cool.
Okay, wonderful. Let's talk about beer.
Yeah, talk about beer. Yes, yes, beer.
My question is, why beer? I mean, I know your grandpa pave a way for you, you know, be adventurous, try as many things as possible.
Yeah.
But beer, are you a drinker? Are you really like to drink?
I love beer.
that helps a lot.
That helps a lot. And the other thing is, like, you know, my family has always been a drinking family. There's no, like, religious background in my family. There was no, like, social taboos. It was never frowned upon if you have a drink occasionally here and there. And my grandparents, growing up watching them, you know, being able to, after a long day, they just sit together, you know, sometimes they talk, sometimes just, like, really relaxing, just being able to have a drink and enjoying. And it has never been a thing for me to be like, well, you are a girl, you're a lady, don't drink. It's never a thing. So, and that's, I guess that's my pre-education for alcohol in general. And then after graduation, I got into a coal mining compliance industry. Mm-hmm. And it's also very heavy, like a male dominant industry.
Right. Yeah.
Most of the people I work with every day, 99% of them are men. And it's just like them seeing me drink and there's like, raise some eyebrow there. But like, it was never like a questioned upon. Still, like, it was a good thing that I get to learn about drinking in a way that's interesting, quite intriguing, that give me a basis for my analysis when I started brewery with my husband. Mm. So back then, like, I got to travel to different parts of China, Inner Mongolia to northeast of China, Shandong, Anhui, everywhere that you can think of that had a coal mine, that I had the privilege to be able to go with the mining directors or the bosses of my family, mostly male, but you know, it doesn't matter with me because I get to observe. So I go to these places, I go to dinners with them. The dinners always start with hard liquor.
Baijiu.
And interesting thing is, like, they start with liquor, they move to wine, and they, you know, move to beer. So usually the most intriguing part for me is, like, you know, everywhere I go, they always take out their, like, local baijiu to impress guests, right?
Yeah, and this is for our audience who doesn't understand what a baijiu is.
Yeah,
it's super, super, super strong liquor.
Yeah,
made
harsh
of grain
liquor.
Normally.
Yeah. Yeah, everywhere we went on the trip, like, you know, the first thing they brought is a local liquor that's made locally. And then they usually move on to imported red wine. And then after that, everybody's like so like filled with alcohol. And that's when they carry out the beer to wash it out. Right?
Wow. Right. To have beer washed out.
The other alcohol.
What, like, a great way.
Yeah, I know. But, like, my observation was, like, no matter where we went, the first two are different, and the third one is always the same. Mm-hmm. It's either a Yanjing, a Qingdao, you know, some fancier places have Heineken or something. They all taste about the same. For me, it was like, well, it's just boring. I guess beer is just boring. I didn't have much of a good impression of beer to start with. And then Carl and I got married. Our first destination for our honeymoon, we went to Laos. Mm. We tried beer Lao Pi Jiu, and my mind was blown, basically. Laos as a country concerning economic development is so far behind China in general. Right. And they have this whole country has this one beer that's so famous and tastes so much better than what was available in China back then. And I was just like, why is that? It's just, how come, like, they could produce a beer, an industrial beer, so high quality, while China couldn't?
Right.
What's the reason? So I was just joking with Carl. I said, you know, even if we could do something slightly better than what was available in the market in China, you know, we could make a successful business out of it.
Mm.
And we're like, yeah, ha ha. And, you know, this is where the seed was planted.
Right,
and then
yeah.
2 months later, we got to travel to Europe, went to the Netherlands, and we also got to, you know, spend days there. Just went to Antwerp and tried, like, so many different small breweries, like limited batches of different beer. And I was just telling Carl, I was like, forget about beer law, we're over that phase. Let's do something really unique. Let's do something that's even better. That's give people more choices concerning beer. So that's why we started. Started with, you know, me really enjoying drinking. So
basically,
in that way,
can I say that you came out the idea of building this beer?
Yeah,
doing craft beer.
I would say. I hope that Carl is not paying close attention to us.
I'm sure he is.
So I would say
he's sitting outside now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he looked up and said hi.
he can listen to it later.
So after you guys finished your visit to Europe, what's the follow-up story for that?
So we came back for that moment that could be like a drunk talk about, you know, starting a brewery in China. We just couldn't get rid of that thought. Mm. It was, I guess it is the genuine interest and passion. And I was like, we got to figure out how to do it. Even if it fails, we got to figure out, you know, how this works.
Mm.
How can we, because we know that, you know, you can start brewing beer basically in your apartment if you want to. There are a lot of homebrewers in the States. It's a craft beer culture thing that where you can start small and then figure it out. So we wanted to. We did a lot of research and we asked people from the States that, like, you know, how do you do this? How can we figure out, like, recipes? And intensive reading and a lot of research, a lot of trial and error in the apartment. And we had to get our hands on everything that we could find that would be able to make it into, like, a brewing kit, because back then home brewing was non-existent in China. So we had to do, like, buy little things here and there trying to make it work. So 2009, we were doing that work and
at home.
At home.
Okay.
Yeah, and then by end of 2009, we got a chance to be transformed to Beijing, and we could find more resources back then, and being able to find an engineer that could build a brewing kit, like, based on our requirement.
Mm-hmm.
We grew beyond the kitchen we had by that point. That my grandparents were, like, getting really impatient with us. Like, it's so many, like, little pots here and there. They would stop from making Shandong typical, you know, breakfast, and they were just getting, like, you know, just get your shit out of here. Find somewhere else that you can actually brew, like, leave my kitchen alone.
Apparently food is very important.
It is.
When the cool grandpa,
yeah,
who is so supportive and right now is so pissed off.
Yeah. So, like, you know, we found our first location, basically putting all of our savings in, like, making it work. Because when we found the first location, Great Leap number 6, it was a deserted yard for years. And it was no window, no door, water access, no electricity. And it was covered with garbage. So we're putting all of our money and work in, you know, cleaning it up. And finally set up a bigger brewing kit over there to be able to make more beer.
Were people helping you guys when you were cleaning up the stuff?
We had friends helping us, for sure. And for the brewing part, that's where we got help that led to the future story. So we were still working, basically. Carl was in IT, and I was doing freelancing translation work at that time for IT companies as well. So we were basically 24/7 on call, like, whenever there's something going on, we have to answer. Mm. So we had to work, like, long hours, and we also used some, like, spare time to clean up the yard, set up the brewing equipment. And then it came to a time that we had to travel to the States, because we had scheduled, you know, wedding for the families in the States side, like, a long time ago. So we had to go.
Well, okay, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys have a 24/7 job.
Yeah.
And then you're studying a business.
Yeah.
And then you have a wedding to plan.
Yeah, I was pregnant.
And 5 months pregnant.
And then you're pregnant. Oh my God, how did you guys manage to do it? Well, I was married last year.
Yeah.
And then
I remember that. Yeah.
And then I had, like,
project management mode all the time.
Exactly. I had 2 weddings to manage, and I was having a job. But then we were thinking about doing this podcast, but I feel like I was so busy and I couldn't. We just couldn't find time to do it.
Yeah.
So we put this idea on hold until this year. But now, hearing
apparently
your story,
we're not determined at all.
I know, not hearing your story. Wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. It feels like the past 7 years just went by like flying, because every day you're filled with stuff. Like, you're never bored. It's never boring. Like, you know, the weddings, the coming of the baby, and it's all like, it's all together. You can't separate one from another. So, yeah.
Right. We're superwoman.
I know, superwoman, super couple.
Oh, I have a very supporting husband. So we do things together and we always help each other where we can. Mm. So when we were trying to go to the States, we already brewed a batch. And we asked a friend who's an American that was studying Chinese back then. We're like, you know, we had to leave for the States. Can you come by and check on the temperature and make sure that, you know, the fermentation goes on well? And he's like, of course. So by the time we came back and we checked on the beer, it was good to go. It was a good beer. And we're like, you know, thank you. His name's Sam. And come, you know, enjoy a pint with us because the beer turned out to be great. So we should drink it. He's like, of course, I'll come by. Do you mind if I bring my roommate with me? And we're like, of course. We have, you know, 2 full kegs. Nothing's gonna go wrong. So by that time it was noon of a Friday, I think. And then, you know, by the time of 3 o'clock, he's like, do you mind if, you know, I bring a few other friends? We're like, of course, bring them on.
And then everyone.
By the time it was 7 o'clock, 50-60 people in that little yard.
Oh, wow.
And they all wanted to have a beer.
Everyone heard that.
Yeah, a lot of them were like, you know, overseas students. Mm. A lot of them, or they were like Chinese students that went overseas. So they've heard or tried craft beer, but not in China, especially not in the cold season Hutong. Mm. Like, it's just like,
right.
What is this guy doing? What are they trying to achieve? Let's go check it out. So it was basically one friend forwarded an email, like a whole bunch of people just came over. And then, you know,
that was before we
officially opened. That was because before we basically wanted that place to brew and have a meeting point for like our friends.
You didn't imagine it.
We didn't want it to be a business.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So like you said, it was so much going on, like the wedding and it's like work.
Exactly.
We didn't really like give it that much thought of building a business. It was like, we'll see how it goes.
Right, you were just wanted to explore a little bit and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Right.
So by that time, like one of the people that came in was also an intern in an international media.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So she's like, I got to bring my chief editor here and he's going to be really interested in learning about your place. So he came. And it was super intrigued. Like, well, when is your opening hours? Because if I write about it, it has to be regular hours.
Viral immediately.
Yeah, I can't write something about it. And then someone comes over, you guys are not open.
Mm. So
we're like, I guess we're open now. So for
like
a month.
You're forced to start a business
by
a foreign correspondent.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So like from then on, we have to figure out like opening hours while working. And then like to a certain point, we had to ask ourselves that question. Do we want to do this or do we want to, you know, go back to our daytime job? Because you can't do both. It's very obvious that you can't do both.
Mm-hmm.
So we made the decision of, you know, quitting our jobs and focusing on this full time. And I haven't regretted a minute of it. It's just it has been a great adventure.
Yeah, what you guys have done, it's amazing. I remember
a
long time ago when you guys just started, I went there, I remember that little courtyard.
Yeah.
And I don't drink. Even though I don't drink, but I love that place. If anybody who has never been to your number 6, right?
Yeah.
It's in a Hutong.
Yeah.
So, and it's like a small courtyard.
It's 110-year-old or something. It used to be a study.
Very...
Yeah, it is a cool place. That's our favorite spot.
Yeah, that's a very cool place. And even back then, when I got into the yard, the noise from outside is suddenly quieted down.
Yeah.
And especially in a beautiful Sunday afternoon in the fall, you just sit in the yard and enjoy some cool beer and sit there and have a chat with your friend. It's just very special Beijing moment.
Yeah.
If you have never done that, you should really do it. It's really, really nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
I remember those dates vividly because Like Ginny and I were discussing, you know, back in the day, you cannot find any place like that.
Right.
Right. Either you go to a real restaurant to eat and yeah. drink, baijiu,
mm-hmm.
or you go to really fancy bars, like yeah. so-called Western bars.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you don't have a like really nice place. Just hang out, you know, have
yeah.
a drink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially so in the afternoon.
Not much of a like a pub culture
exactly.
in China.
Exactly.
That, you know, where you can just have a chat, mm. you know, with your friend and sitting down and then, you know, have something to eat is super relaxing. One of the first memories about Grey Leap, I think is the second one.
Yeah. Number 12 by Chun Xiu Lu.
And I remember I went in there and I was completely overwhelmed by how busy it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, it looks like all the foreigners in Beijing went there.
Yeah.
And also there are Chinese people. And I was like, oh my God, what's the fuss about this place? Why is it so popular?
Yeah.
And when I had the first sip of the beer,
mm-hmm.
I remember I drank the honeymoon.
Yeah.
And I was like blown away. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. I'm not a beer person.
Yeah.
I'm still not a beer person, like, in general.
Yeah.
But I really love the beer.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I love the burgers.
Thank you.
The burger is so good. I mean, other people argue that other burgers are better.
I wonder, has a burger cup
or whatever. Yeah, I insist, you guys, your burger is the best.
Good. Good to know.
And also, the wuharou burger, the pork belly.
Yes.
There's a wuharou.
Oh my God.
No, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Oh my God, I'm hungry already.
It's kind of like a hidden secret. A lot of people don't know about the wuharou burger. It's actually really good.
Right. Yeah. Wow. Come back to the beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, we're too carried away with the drink and
I'm too excited about it.
Yeah, we should do another episode on drink and food.
Yeah. It should be the purpose of the beer. Talk about beer, you get excited, you enjoy the experience. And
right.
That's all it's about.
Yep.
Good.
Really, so was he also as interested as you into beer? So what was his motive in doing this, setting up this business?
That's the fascinating part, because I know Carl. My husband is a good friend with Carl. And last time he took us to the number 12 and gave us a tour.
Yeah.
I can feel like how enthusiastic
he
is
about
the whole thing, you know, how to brew the beer. I don't know one of the technical terms.
I'm going to insert his quote right now. So Carl, he's a person of details. From day one, we started making beer. It has never been easy, and it's there are like different challenges every day. But for him to be able to like stuck it through, to be able to like, you know, constantly make good beer, and it's basically he wants to spend time with me. He wants to make me happy. Every little thing that he does makes me happy.
Yeah. Can I add it here? I mean, just now before this recording, we're having lunch with Carl and Liu Fang together. I mean, in my mind, Carl is this big, tough guy, you know, doesn't show much emotion. But he was saying the most beautiful thing. He was that...
He's a very sweet person.
Yeah, he was just saying that everything we did with Great Leap is to make Liu Fang happy,
mm-hmm.
to do whatever she's enthusiastic and passionate to do.
Mm-hmm.
If tomorrow Liu Fang says that, you know, brewery is boring and we can just, you know, shut it down and close the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was so touched.
It's so wonderful.
Sweet.
Yeah. He's a very sweet person.
Yeah, because once again, I thought he's the one who was really into this.
Mm-hmm.
And then today, after the interview, after you telling the story, actually, you are the source of the whole thing. You are the, you know,
because
original...
he's passionate about you.
About you.
Mm-hmm.
And then so that he's passionate about what you love.
No.
That's so wonderful.
He is.
So this is a real life example of 爱屋及乌.
Exactly. That's a great term for that.
Yeah.
Well, we're so glad that we are unveiling this very sweet story.
No.
But back to the work.
Yes. I'm the non-sweet person in our combination, so.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He's the one that's got all the passion. He's the one that's got, you know, full of emotions. I'm the one that's usually, like, pretty calm about everything.
Mm-hmm. So that's why you said that you're the 老板 and he's the 老板娘.
He's 老板娘, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, boss is to be in charge, so.
Yeah, that's just to answer my question. Before this interview, I really want to know who is the boss in the family. Okay, now I know.
Yeah. We all have different abilities. There are things that he can do I can never do. And there are things that I can do maybe, you know, you know, in a better and a faster way. But, you know, we support each other in decisions because this is basically our baby. And it's older than my actual kid. It's like watching it grow is our common passion. We wanna see it grow. And we are using all the time and energy we could to be devoted in this business. So,
well, this is actually setting up for my next question. Because your experience working with your husband, because this is like a business, you know, you grow together. I know my husband through work, and then we started dating and we got married, but we weren't really working together.
Mm-hmm.
We were on different teams.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I think about working with him, and I thought, you know, we could work together well because, you know, we're very similar people. But at the same time, I would think, how would we handle it if we have differences, and then we, you know, like if we approach things differently? But then, because we're working for other people, so it doesn't really matter at the end of the day that we have different, you know, opinions. But what about you guys? Because this is a business that you grow together, and then also it's a business that you have to making lots of decisions.
Right.
I imagine there must be lots of times that you have a disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you handle this and how would you approach it?
Mm-hmm.
And who's finally calling the shots?
I think what you asked the question sort of answered the question at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can all agree that there's no two identical minds that would agree all the time. This is just impossible. If they say that they do, they must be lying because it's not true.
Yes, exactly.
So what you asked about, you know, you working for other people together, it makes it easier to like agree, disagree. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it is exactly that reason because we are working for ourselves. And all of our decisions have to be based on the principle of when we set the goal in the beginning, when we set out to, you know, achieve what we want to achieve. We wanted to achieve like 7 years ago. That's a common principle of like what's the best for the business and what decisions need to be made, what knowledge need to be recognized before we make the decisions. And even though, you know, our approaches are different, but whatever decision we make, we need to make sure that we're not driving ourselves away from the central goal, the essential destination. So there are things that he's got more knowledge of that I would put my 100% trust in him. He's really good and learning really fast. He's a really quick learner. Mm. So brewing-wise, he's got way more knowledge than I do. He's one of the most brilliant minds in this industry, and I would trust 100% of the decision he's made based on his knowledge. And there are things that I'm really good at, like, you know, he would give me the mutual trust.
Right.
And we always, like, talk to one another, and there's just way too much information being shared in between us all the time. This is like to a point that people would assume if I tell Carl something, Liu Feng must have known. Like, there's no way they don't know. They just text each other. Even if they're not sitting together, they're texting each other all the time.
Aww.
They're sending emails to each other all the time.
Oh,
so
sweet. I know it's a working relationship, but it sounds really, really sweet.
It is great working with them. You know, we have our disagreements, but it's always solved with, you know, respecting the principles and mutual trust and transparency.
Okay. Yeah, another question is, I mean, beer is something, maybe it's a stereotype, but it's very much a drink that a lot of guys enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess brewery is also a very martial industry.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, I mean, a lot of owners of breweries in Beijing, they're guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So as a woman in this industry, how do you navigate? Have you been, how to say, discriminated?
Mm-hmm.
Or people ask you weird questions?
Right.
Or how do you deal with it?
Right. This question is important because, like, for me personally, growing up, I'm kind of, like, shielded by my grandparents, like, you know, the strong building of my confidence of, like, you shouldn't be affected by, you know, opinions like that. So, like, for me, discrimination is there, and two types of discrimination you run into. I would say most of the time it's like unconscious bias. It's something that, you know, people, the way they're brought up, the way that they're taught, the way that, you know, their typical families are of, like, you know, women are to be protected. And for situations like that, you know, you just kind of like, this is a problem where you just talk to these people and, you know, communicate and make sure that they understand this is not, you can't just paint this picture on me because this is not who I am. And then there are a lot more women like me that are doing the same thing. There are a lot of like Chinese female entrepreneurs, like a lot of women that would, you know, voice their opinions and people respect them. And on the other hand, the extreme situations would be people intentionally ignore you. They don't acknowledge that you exist. We've talked when you sit in a meeting, you know, they don't look you in the eyes, they don't address you, you don't exist. Things like that happen, absolutely happening in my industry. And then I got called names by other people, being the stupid little girl, not knowing what she does. You know, that was said by, you know, a lot of people that would respect as peers or as industry people. And they would...
That's pretty harsh. Like, why would they feel they have the right or they can just say things like that when they don't even know you that well?
Exactly. They don't. They
That's
don't know.
Stupidity.
It is, like, narrow-minded.
That's
like,
just so sad.
You've run into people like that. They call your names behind you, and you've run into people like, you know, they would come to the table of industrial peers and they would say hi and greet everyone, shake hands with everyone but you. Or they would be like describing you as, you know, the person that's kind of like Carl's assistant because he's a foreigner that runs a business in China. Yeah, he needs a secretary sort of a thing. You run into those people, you just feel sorry for them being so narrow-minded.
You know, I'm thinking, you know, whether it has something to do with you being successful and you being successful in a supposed to be a very male-dominated industry as a woman.
Yeah.
And could it be that something like, you know, they just couldn't handle that? They just couldn't handle a woman, a Chinese woman, a young Chinese woman, being successful in a beer industry.
Yeah. It's very possible. I'm still waiting for them to come to me and greet me and ask me this question.
Yeah. I think it's something, you know, for, I don't know, brewery industry, but for a lot of industry I know that they have this old tradition or old system that, you know, male are the dominant one in the industry.
Yeah.
So they're familiar with that. But suddenly, recently, there are more women in the business and they're super successful and they're more international. They know the business well and they can do everything that the guys can do too. And that's something.
And then do it better.
Yeah, even do better. Yeah. And that's something they're so unfamiliar with. So they guard themselves, build this fence around themselves and try to use the way that they are familiar to explain this new phenomenon.
Yeah,
I think that's, you know, they try to, the insecurity, like you mentioned, is that they are not sure about themselves. And then they use this old way to say, oh, they're a girl, I don't want to deal with her, you know, she must be an assistant, to disguise their thinking.
Right.
That's my theory, my logic.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the best way is to be in their face, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
And then to call them out.
Yeah.
Like,
if
next time that someone's not, like, saying hi, then we can ask them, like, why
absolutely.
Are you ignoring me?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just people getting too much leeway out of it, like they feel that they can get away,
and
then so that they keep doing it.
Well, those are the extremes, but on the other hand, it's just like being a female entrepreneur in China. I think we have the advantages of, like, you know, Chinese women supporting one another. Chinese women are really strong.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, like, continue on this topic, like being a female entrepreneur, and do you run into any challenges in expanding the business or building the business?
Like, being an entrepreneur in general is challenging. And being a female in this industry trying to run a business, it doesn't have more challenges than any male. But I would say being a female adds a lot of value when I, you know, walk into meetings, when I get things done, when people get to know me more, and you come from a different perspective, and, you know, like, you can make an impression even better, and you can, you know, get jobs done in a very fast way based on, like, you know, how you handle things. It's all advantages instead of disadvantages. Yeah, there are absolutely noises around it, but at the end of the day, what's your goal? Is your career driving you to move forward to solve the challenges? Because a challenge is a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, you know, this brewery and the restaurant catering business is really tough. Mm-hmm. You guys, like you mentioned, that there were a lot of challenges. You guys testing each other, discuss decisions all the time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you also have a kid. So how do you balance that? You know, how much time do you spend with the kid and with your grandparents who live with you guys, right?
Right.
And how much you manage the business, and is there any conflict?
I think that question is a very typical female question, because nobody really asks that question about a male entrepreneur. Because it's like, of course you work, and you know, if you spend some time with your children or not, it's not important. They see you as this person of, you own a business, let's talk about business. And for me, I don't believe in like, you can have it all, because you can't. You only have 24 hours. You find your priority at a certain time of your day, and you just have to really finding a way to figure out whether you want to spend 20 minutes of quality time with your kid and doing something that would be memorable, would be important, would, you know, make your kid feel special, or you would rather spend 3 hours watching TV with your child, you know, not really getting anything out of it, but on the record, you're spending more time with your child.
Yeah.
So it really has to be a lot of planning, and being able to have a family that supports your decisions, and being able to step in and help you whenever you need, whether it's career or you know, your elders in the family, your children. It's a decision to be made, and I don't like to be pictured by other people like who I should be, like,
right,
you know, you're a career woman, you're a housewife, who you are, you are the combination of everything. It requires work, and also like society expects more out of women because the role changing.
We're running into this kind of discussion all the time.
And
we have like double job. Like, you know, we're expected to work hard and be a professional and being successful.
Be a perfect mom at
be
the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just too much.
Yeah, you just have to, there are sacrifices you have to make and there are joys you get from the whole process.
What's your typical day look like?
My typical day? I would describe it as never boring. it really varies. In our industry, I don't spend that many hours in the office. I get to, you know, talk to different people on our team, and they are brewers, or they're like the marketing team. They talk to media, and then I get to be a part of that. And then Carl and I spent a huge amount of time traveling internationally to like brewing related conferences and beer festivals, getting to know other people, learning from other people, getting inspirations in general, and making sure that every beer that, you know, we hand to a customer is something that's worth their money, that's worth their time. So there's a lot of work around that needs to be done. We talk to our quality manager, and we do like tests, and we go visit, you know, where we source our raw materials and equipment and all that. It's very interesting. Every day is different, your schedule is different, and then, you know, there's time to be spent with the family. So it's all very fulfilling. That's my typical day. It's every day you wake up, it's something new. There's always a new challenge. There's always a new problem for you to solve. I think that's just the spirit of being an entrepreneur in general.
Wow. Another word is exciting.
It's exciting. It is.
So 7 years, and then locations. How many locations do you have now?
Right now we have 3 locations where we, you know, we would be open to customers, and they get drinks and food there. And we also have another location by the Great Wall where we do experiments, and we get to try like different types of brewing techniques and you know, just be creative and play with it a little bit. But that's not open to the public. That's 3.5 locations and 100 plus employees.
Right. Yeah. Wow. And then that's a huge growth in 7 years. And then you guys were the first to start doing this in North China.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I think in the last few years, there are so many breweries were launched in China. We're in Beijing, at least, you know, we've seen so many. So how do you see the competition? And how do you continue to be differentiated and unique, and then continue to track your customers back?
Right, right. We're the first one that started this thing in Beijing, and throughout the years we've seen like customers grow, and there are more and more people that have got the inspiration that they look at Great Leap and they see how successful a brewery can be and they start their own. And to be honest, I see most of it as mimicking what Great Leap has done in the past. And there is still a long way to go before like Chinese brewing industry to be at a level like we are all contributing and making great beer all the time. There's a lot of things to do before that goal is achieved. As of right now, what we can do is to make sure that we have always focused on making world-class Chinese craft beer, and we'll continue doing that. And we'll continue learning more about brewing. We'll continue, you know, being able to help peers grow to that level. Before that, we'll just continue focusing on what we do and what we do the best and be Great Leap.
I noticed that, you know, one of the names of your beers have a lot of like historical figures in it. Where does the inspiration come from? It's very interesting.
And who come up with names?
Yeah.
I assume you.
Maybe Carl, you never know.
There are different categories. Right. Concerning who has come up with most Chinese names, definitely me.
Okay.
But concerning who has come up with the beer names that have sold the best, the names actually come from him.
What are the top three best-selling beer?
Yeah. So the top three beers that we sell the most is the Honey Ma Gold.
Your favorite.
And the Little General. And the Beijing Yingshi, the Pilsner. The Edmund Beckles. Because when we started making beer, we have never doubted that, you know, we should make something Western that would, you know, cater to Western taste. We are in China. We're a Chinese brewing brand. And we're making Chinese beer. So ingredients, almost 80% of all of our ingredients are from China. And then Chinese stories behind it, because the inspirations are everywhere. Like, you can't run away from it. You gotta embrace it. Everything we see is everything we've read about is, you know, it's right there. Our logos and images is all very, very Chinese.
Right.
So for our first beer that we have tried is the Honey Ma Gold. And the inspiration comes from, you know, of course, Chinese cuisine, where, you know, we use a lot of huajiao. And we also like to balance the harshness of huajiao. We use a sweetener to make it more acceptable for your palates.
Right.
So like we've all tried, you know, the mi zhi kao chi. It's literally huajiao with feng mi.
Right, yeah.
So it's pepper and honey.
On the chicken wings. It's wonderful. Like, you know, we had this idea. I was like, well, if this is something that people like to eat, why can't we have a drink that has, you know, these ingredients with it? So when we started experimenting with making Honey Ma, we probably did 50 batches of Honey Ma before we found the best combination, the best recipe for making that beer. In the beginning, we were trying the recipe. My family back in Shandong, in Chufu, they have an apiary that makes honey. So the original recipe, you know, the honey comes from Shandong, from Confucius' birthplace. And then the huajiao comes from Sichuan, where Du Fu spent most of his time.
Right.
So Carl came up with the name. It's Du Fu de Fu, Kongzi de Zi. It's called Fu Zi
Pijiao.
Oh, right. That's where it came from.
Right.
Wow.
I lost this battle. He came up with the most popular name, so.
Wow. And one of the other, like, Beijing Yinshi, actually, I didn't know anything about it. I thought it's just a random name.
Right.
And then later, because you guys have Jeremiah to talk about that, I learned a lot of the history behind it.
Right.
And also,
what was it?
Edmund Beckles.
Yeah. He lived in Beijing. He's a foreigner living in Beijing in late Qing Dynasty, I think.
Yeah. End of the it's a Cixi era.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he has a lot of engagement with the royal family, with the Cixi, and he left out a lot of record, I think.
Historical
record about what's going on in the royal family, all of that.
Yeah. But there's also a lot of clouds concerning all of his stories. So it's like, you know, he's the hermit of Peking, and we think that he's such a good representative of what Beijing really is to a lot of people. It's gossipy, it's mysterious, it's bold, it's everything.
Yeah.
So all of our IPAs are general themed, and they're mostly like Chinese generals. And we wanted to make a beer that's specifically like a woman themed. And Mulan is one to go.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a male favored drinks and then compared to women? Is it women's taste is more sort of soft and then sweeter?
Here is an assumption that a lot of people have, like, mm-hmm. you know, men drink heavy beer, women drink light beer. It's not necessarily like that. What we have observed is actually quite interesting, and to a way it's contrary to that, because we have a lot of customers that come in, and we have probably like 55 male, 45 female customers, mm-hmm. and this is a group of 6 male customers. This is how they order. Mm-hmm. First one, I want a pale ale. Rest of them, I want a pale ale. So this is how they drink.
Yeah.
And then for female customers, is usually they sit down, they really carefully read through the menu and look at the board, and they ask questions about, you know, what does it taste like, right?
Yes.
The hidden general, what does it
right.
taste like?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is it floral? You said you have asmenthus, you know, flowering, and is it a floral, or is it, you know, what does it taste like, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, is this sweet? Is this bitter? They would ask questions, and they would be like, oh, I'll go with, you know, hidden general. The other one would be like, oh, I like something more sour. I like something more, you know, spicy. Like, you know, they would actually order and experience the difference, and they'll be like bold in trying the different flavor, and they'll be like exchanging notes and exchanging glasses.
Oh, we do that.
And
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we do that. Well, that's what are different things?
Yeah, but
yeah.
It never really goes through my mind why we're doing that.
And I feel like the guys do the same thing. Now I think about it. No, they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they don't.
That's exactly
one beer. This is the round of beers that we're drinking. So.
Yeah.
It is really interesting. Like, we get a lot of notes from like our female customers. Like,
right.
This is the beer I like. It doesn't necessarily have to be the light one. It's like, this is the IPA I drink all the time. Whenever I come into Great Leap, this is the IPA I have. Can you continue making this beer? They give you really valuable notes.
Mm.
A lot of them have really sensitive palates.
Right.
They know, you know, what they're looking for in a beer. It's absolutely wonderful. Also, our chief of, you know, brewing operation is also a female that's, you know, highly trained in, you know, brewing beer and tasting. It's like, you know, some of the highest credentials you could find in this industry, and happens to be a woman. Beer doesn't divide one gender from the other. It doesn't have to be like that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so fascinating. And then, I mean, it sort of solved the stereotype for us.
To be honest, I don't drink much, but I thought guys should be the one who really care about the taste.
Exactly.
Yeah, they should care about taste. They know it better, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting to hear that actually women has more special taste about their beer.
And then they give feedback and they really care about it.
I think a lot of men do know their beer, and we just can't underestimate how many women out there that also know their beer and know what they want. So.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Actually, as a person who don't drink, I go to your restaurants a lot. What a time! I go there for the food
and order ginger ale.
Yeah,
ginger ale
is a good one too.
But it's really good. It's a homemade ginger ale.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's a lot of ginger in there. Yeah, for sure. We make it from the scratch. Yeah,
it's really good. You know, it's great for somebody like me who don't drink beer.
Yeah,
and can also have a nice drink over there.
Yeah,
but I just feel like the burgers that you guys made are really amazing. Well, the food is amazing. Where do you get the idea about the food? Who designed the menu and who cooked the food?
Mm-hmm. Ever since we started Great Leap, beer has always been the focus.
Mm.
Like, when we work with our, you know, chefs, we have always made sure that the menu absolutely has to accommodate to the beers that we serve. We have always wanted different types of meat on the menu, and our executive chef, King Hong, and he came up with the menu and made sure that, you know, carried out all the SOPs and make sure it was designed well with the menu and everything. So he's a really talented chef. He's really good at designing the menu and making it happen.
Wow. Maybe one last question. What's your goal for the future? What do you hope to achieve, say, 10 years time?
Right, yeah.
What I hope to achieve is that, let's say, 10 years later, when people still talk about, you know, craft beer and high quality beer, world-class beer, and the world-class beer that's from China, and Great Leap is the one that comes to their mind. The way we have always striven for, like, you know, getting our beer to more hands, and still working really hard making that happen. It's fun. It's been fun.
Great. Well,
good luck with your journey, adventure. I'm sure you guys will do great.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's absolutely a pleasure to have you here.
My pleasure.
And we hope that if we're still doing this in 10 years time, that we hope to invite you back and then talk about your next 10 years goal.
Thank you. Greatly. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
It's a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to Woman. If you have any feedback, write to us at womenpodcast, womenpodcast@outlook.com.